Hello and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, Ben Golliver. What's up, man?
Not too much, Andrew. I'm bringing the heat today. For some reason, I'm super energetic. I couldn't explain exactly why, but one reason is I know you've got a lot of Warriors thoughts that have just been like percolating, sort of like lava in the volcano, and you've been promising to explode here for probably the last week or so, and finally, you just said enough was enough last night on the text message. Like, we just have to do it. So, everyone, strap in. Andrew's about to lose his mind.
Hold on. Calm down. I'm not going to explode. I just feel like we are overdue for an honest conversation about Kevin Durant. I think that we have sort of skirted the issue for the last several months, and that's fine. But it's time to just talk about this a little bit. I mean, we're also going to hit Porzingis and the emoji controversy over the weekend. We're going to talk about the Raptors a little bit. We're going to hit Wizards Celtics at the end for a little bit. I don't really have thoughts on the Rockets and Spurs because both of those teams are going to get destroyed by the Warriors. So let's just talk about Golden State for a while.
Well, look, I think everyone's antennas should already be going off because you opened this sounding like Phil Donahue with this honest conversation talk, like as if like paternity of a child is at stake or like the future of a local community is on the line here. I'm nervous, man. Where are you going with this?
No, all right. I don't think of us as like a hot takey type podcast, right? I mean, that's not really our place. We're sort of both basketball nerds. Like, it's a gorgeous day in DC right now, and I'm in here talking about basketball for the next hour with you, and it's pathetic, but it's the life we chose. So
no, I'm the level-headed logical guy who brings the numbers and you're the other guy.
No, look, I'm saying, like, if we have a hot take, we brand it as a hot take, and it's like half serious, but this is more of a serious take. I really don't think that Kevin Durant, it's not healthy for him to be on the Warriors this year. And it's warped the league and sort of sapped the playoffs of some energy. And I was complaining to you about it on Saturday night during that Jazz game as Durant was going off and I was watching it being like, this isn't as fun as it should be. And I was hitting you up, texting you about how KD needs to leave this summer and we need to free KD. And lo and behold, like minutes after my initial text message to you, we got an email from Daniel Wesolowski in Poland who hit us up and said, I found the way to save the NBA from super boring Warriors domination. We need David Stern back. He'll go to the Warriors in the summer after they finish celebrating their gentleman sweep of the Cavs, and he'll quietly explain to them that Adam Silver made a rookie mistake by not telling him about a secret rule that's hidden in the CBA. That rule is simple. It says you can't have two MVPs playing on the same team. And then Stern will give them a simple choice, Curry or Durant, 24 hours to make a decision. Let me know what you guys think. Love the pod. What do you think, Ben? Are you with me? Are you with Daniel?
Let's start with the facts here. Game 3 against Utah. KD turned in a vintage KD performance, an angry KD performance. I mean, he's busting off crossover, shaking Rudy Gobert left and right. He's yelling at the Jazz mascot. He's talking crap to a fan sitting courtside. He's shoving Gobert to get the flagrant foul. He's basically punking an entire team and a state after they, you know, the team essentially said, your nightlife sucks. We're going to punk you before we even go play you, right? You really didn't have any fun with that?
Like,
you
okay, so my issue there is a lot of that game reminded me why I've always loved Kevin Durant so much. Like, he's always been like a no BS superstar, and he's mixed it up every step of the way. Like, especially over the last 4 or 5 years, he's had more of an edge, and it's fun to watch. But I just wasn't having fun watching him on that Warriors team. Like, it just sort of, he kind of comes off more like a bully in that context. Does that make any sense to you?
Is it sort of the feeling that, like, let's say the shots don't fall, there's still like six different safety nets that save the Warriors from disaster, whereas when he was taking all those heroic shots in Oklahoma City, there was like do or die stakes to all of it, right? Is that sort of the problem?
Yeah, like it's not cool to go off and win a playoff game for a team that was never going to be threatened anyways. I mean, granted, like the Jazz would have won game three without Durant there, but like they were not, the Warriors would not really be threatened in this series with or without KD dominating. Like basically, Steph Curry struggled in game three. Klay Thompson, I think, had 6 points, was outscored by Zaza Pachulia. So they were having issues, but big picture, we've seen already this year that the Warriors can function just fine without KD. And even when KD is sort of reduced to more of a role player who does everything on defense and helps in more like subtle ways, there are games when he turns into like Golden State's Otto Porter. And that's really sad to me. And even when he goes off, like in game three, I don't know. It just kind of feels empty. And that's a bummer for one of the best three players of the last like 15 years.
I mean, what was remarkable to me about that game three was how long it had been since we'd seen that from KD. I mean, obviously the injury factored into that as well, but it had been more than 3 months and he really played in a late game scenario with stakes. And it had seemed like it's been a while since he's really looked like that all-NBA first team caliber guy in a big moment. So I actually was like, part of me was really cherishing that, hey, it's finally back. And then part of me, I will admit, was allowing you to sort of seep into my brain a little bit and you know, detract from the fun. Now, you said this was going to be an honest conversation and you know, this is a safe space, you know, a no judgment zone.
Right.
I want you to just keep it real. Are you even watching the Warriors or are you watching the Warriors less than usual? Are you tuning them off at halftime like a lot of people I've heard say? Because the TV ratings are still kind of there. The buzz is not there, man. This team does not have the same buzz as last year.
Yes, I am definitely watching the Warriors a lot less than last year. Last year, Warriors games were appointment television for me. This year, I mean, like Saturday night, I tuned in for the second half after the Caps game and watched the entire second half. And first of all, we're going to get to Draymond. Draymond without Kerr is like my favorite player on the planet. I will battle for him until the end of time. But the actual games, yeah, whenever I watch the Warriors, I find myself getting annoyed. And then I end up spending like at least 10 or 15 minutes firing off text messages to various friends, bitching about how lame Kevin Durant's decision was this summer. So that was the story again Saturday night. It'll probably be the story in the conference finals and the finals, and we could just do this forever. But to follow up really quickly on Daniel's question, it would be awesome to have David Stern come back. It would be awesome to force the Warriors to make a decision in 24 hours. That would be one of the better spectacles in NBA history, and I am all in on that. And I also, on a more serious note though, like Kevin Durant can still leave in the next year or two, and I'm curious what you think about how long this Warriors team stays together.
Well, on Daniel's scenario, I gotta say, it was immaculately crafted. I mean, he really thought of every detail. It was sort of like a home art project email, and I really encourage
right.
that. Just up front, I have a hard time with sort of this fan fiction stuff or these hypotheticals in general, right? Like, I'd never watched cartoons as a kid. I'm not into science fiction. I don't like superhero movies. I'm sort of like, you know, that guy can't really fly. Like, it just doesn't really resonate with me. And so when we're playing these games of like, oh, let's magically break up the Warriors, let's undo history, let's rewind and sort of picture these different scenarios, I just have a hard time even digging into that at all because it happened. Like, he's there. He looks like he's having an awesome time. His life is really pretty simple if you think about it in terms of his workload this season compared to last year, the support he's got, the lifestyle, all of it. So I'm almost rejecting the premise just off the top and saying, look, like, sorry, like, you know, sort of like a Cameron take, like, like, hey, Andrew, you mad, doggy? Like, you mad, but... who cares?
Oh, my God. Please never impersonate Cameron on the podcast again. That's number one. Number two, I will grant you that, yes, like, the Warriors look like they're having more fun than anyone in basketball, and I don't blame anyone for wanting to play there, but it's kind of, it seemed odd to me the way, like, this is just so obviously bad for the sport, and there's kind of a disconnect between the way basketball media talk about this and the way regular people discuss Kevin Durant on the Warriors. Like, any normal person can look at this and say that it's A, it was pretty lame for KD to jump to a team that beat him the year before and a team that had won 73 games and was already succeeding without him. And B, it's stupid for the league to have Durant and Curry on the same team. But for some reason, like, that has been tough for most of us to say out loud this year. And like, you look at the playoffs right now, it would be so much more interesting if Durant were on the Celtics or the Wizards about to go toe-to-toe with LeBron. And then the Warriors would still be in great shape because they're still great. Like, I love the Warriors and I love Kevin Durant. It's just that together this is an issue. But the Warriors would be the best team in the league, but like potentially vulnerable. We could talk themselves into them potentially losing in the conference finals or the finals. LeBron would actually have competition in the East.
So let me get this straight. In your scenario, the league would be a lot better if Kevin Durant was on your favorite team.
No, I'm not going to let you turn this into some Wizards thing, okay? I swear to you, I swear on my life that this is not about Kevin Durant needing to be in D.C., okay? All along, the reason I wanted that to happen, it was mutually beneficial, okay? It would have been really cool to have him on my favorite team, but it also would have been a perfect basketball situation for him sliding in to that 3-4 spot next to Otto Porter with Markieff Morris coming off the bench. Like, it would have been fun. And the same is true with KD in Boston. The same is true. We could throw KD in South Beach next year and see what happens with him on the Heat. Maybe a reunion with Dion Waiters. Like, there are places you could throw Durant around the league where he would make the landscape a lot more fun.
Yeah, it's just remarkable to me the crystallization of your vision of Durant in D.C. and sort of the vagaries around these Durants in these other markets. But let me throw you a life raft here. Wouldn't we really just prefer to have KD back in OKC so we could see the rematch of the Thunder and the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals? Like, isn't that a better scenario than even Durant on Boston or Washington? Because last year's Western Conference Finals were awesome. This year's Western Conference Finals are not shaping up to be awesome, given Tony Parker's injury for San Antonio. And Houston's, you know, shakiness here, you know, the variability up and down. And we're running into a scenario here potentially where we'd have either two sweeps or gentlemen sweeps in these conference finals. So we're all just now stuck waiting for basically another three solid weeks for either one of these super teams to get challenged. That's the frustrating part, right?
Yeah. And I think it's not healthy for the sport to have like the best team be playing games that nobody is really interested in. I haven't looked at the ratings. Are they about the same for the Warriors?
There's been mixed messages in terms of how the playoff ratings are doing. I'm sure ultimately what the TV networks are going to be broadcasting is the finals ratings. And if we get Golden State Cleveland 3, they're going to be off the freaking charts. And I guess that is sort of my pragmatic answer to a lot of what you're saying. I'm not even necessarily disagreeing with what you're saying. And I think when you mentioned earlier, oh, we've been afraid to say these things, I think there's less stigma around that. And that's probably good because we're watching this play out and we're all so invested in the playoffs on a day-to-day basis. And they have been, I think you can argue, and some people have, a little bit of a letdown. But if we get this dream finals matchup, if we're just patient enough and we ride this out and we get KD finally head-to-head against LeBron again in the finals, we get these two super teams going back and forth after all the drama of last year's finals, isn't that worth it? Doesn't that make this suffering not feel so bad?
Yeah, that would be worth it. I just don't think that's how this is going to play out. And there's, like I've said in the past, there's a part of me that really enjoys how much better the Warriors are than everyone else, because I've liked this Warriors team over the last two or three years, and it will be fun to watch them just go scorched earth and silence every critic on earth with like a 16-0, 16-1, 16-2 run through to the title. But as far as the finals is concerned, I think you think that Cavs series will be more competitive than it actually will be.
Yeah, and I want to do something that's very difficult for someone who's been a Michigan football fan his entire life to do, but and especially, you know, given the turn of events in last November's election. But I'm going to stand up for Ohio here a little bit. Because, look, LeBron James has been the best player in these playoffs by a lot. Like, I love Kawhi. I think Harden's had his moments. You know, Durant was good in Game 3. LeBron has been the freaking man. And when you look at Cleveland's run, their point differential is not as good as Golden State's. I mean, Golden State right now is on pace, I believe, if they win the title, to have the greatest point differential of any champion ever. That is very impressive. Cleveland has mm-hmm. been smoking some good teams. And you go side by side in terms of Raptors or Jazz, like Raptors without Lowry versus Jazz without Hill. That's a comparable situation to me. Pacers versus Blazers without Nurkic. I mean, that's a comparable opponent. Cleveland has handled its business. LeBron has looked better than anybody. And their depth has really shown out. I mean, they've had a great second unit performance. LeBron's getting tons and tons of rest. Kyrie turned it on when he needed to late in game 4 to close the Raptors out. He made it look so simple. They've been punking people left and right. I mean, we've gone through the laundry list of things they did to humiliate the Raptors. I mean, the Raptors were just blatantly waving the white flag during the middle of the series, saying that they wish they had LeBron on their team. They had no answer for him. They were willing to spend money to for anyone who would be able to help them stop him. I think that two super teams potentially is excellent for the NBA and maybe the best case scenario, and not just for the NBA, but also for Durant. This guy, if he was still in Oklahoma City, I don't think that that team would have any shot against Cleveland. If it was the Thunder versus the Cavaliers in the finals, I think LeBron would be able to take him out. I think Durant, ultimately, his decision boils down to his only path to winning a title this season. If he didn't join the Warriors, I don't see another scenario where he wins a championship this year. And for that reason, I don't hold it against him like a lot of people do. I understand it. And I'm not ready to write them in as being able to knock the Cavaliers out just ASAP right out of the finals. I think that's foolish.
Okay, all right. Hold on. 3 weeks ago, you opened a podcast by wondering aloud whether a title with this Warriors team would mean as much for Kevin Durant's legacy because of how well they've played without him.
For sure. Agreed. But let me clarify here real quick. A title with question marks around it is better than no title. If he goes home again, that's a stigma, right? Like, if it's the Thunder and they lose to LeBron and the Cavaliers in the finals, that's worse than getting a title where now he has to kind of explain how he got it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. I don't know. Your point about the Cavs is well taken. I'm just not convinced that we've learned as much about the Cavs as it may appear, because the Raptors were just that awful, and like the Pacers are the Pacers, and just I don't know if they've had competition.
Humor me, though. LeBron has been ridiculous. Just give me like 15 seconds of you admitting that LeBron has completely taken his game to a new level. The guy is unreal right now.
Yeah, no, LeBron is beyond reproach. He is playing basically perfect basketball, making it look way too easy. And it's almost like, I don't really know what to say about this, because it's just so unprecedented for someone to be this good for this long. And I think what I enjoy most is that he is playing at the peak of his powers and is clearly like confident to a degree that he's never been in his career before. And it's rare that you get to see someone with this level of confidence without losing a step. You know, like he is like old man Kobe right now, but he's still in his prime. And that has been a lot of fun to watch.
I mean, did you ever have a rival when you were growing up, or like somebody who was like, you just always felt like you were in their shadow, like you're trying to like keep up with them, or, you know, you'd get an A, they'd get an A plus, you get a 99, they'd get an 100, or, you know, it's just some sort of a scenario like that? Because I really truly believe that's where Durant is. I mean, I think ultimately he's looking at LeBron last year, ridiculous finals performance. We don't have to rehash games 5, 6, and 7, out of this world. And he's also living in a reality right now where LeBron's last stretch of games, 41-13-12, 33-10-4, 35-10-4, 39-6-4, 35-8-7, 35-9-6. And KD's thinking, look, I'm going to be stuck behind this guy forever unless I make a move. And
right.
that he made the right move if that's what's driving him. Everybody says they want to win a ring, right? Who's willing to sacrifice the PR blowback, all these questions that guys like you are raising to actually go out and get one? Not many people.
But that's whack. Like, I think the difference between you and me on this one is that I have watched KD his entire career and think he's an incredible Hall of Fame, top 15, top 20 type player. And he's behaving like someone less than that. You know what I mean? Like, it's lame to go and have to join a stacked roster just to prove yourself. Imagine if Shaq had gone and joined the Bulls to prove that he could win a title. That would have been completely lame, and everyone would have admitted it at the time. And for some reason, KD's kind of getting a pass. And so to circle back to KD, you sent me a tweet making fun of his critics, responding to my criticism, and it's from Beak GSW, and he says, "Grown men been complaining every day about KD deciding to do what's best for himself and his family since July 4th. Tragic, man." And see, this pisses me off more than anything. Like, don't try to turn me into a Trump supporter just because I think this is whack. I'm speaking as a basketball fan, not some, like, guardian of sports integrity. I just think that KD and Golden State makes basketball less interesting. And KD can do whatever he wants for him and his family. And it's worked out for him. He looks like he's having a great year. But he gets paid $30 million a year specifically because other people have opinions about these choices. And it's weird to me that not only Kevin Durant, but like Warriors fans and a lot of people around the NBA just expect fans to sort of blindly support whatever he wants to do.
Just kind of off topic, but like, did that criticism, the grown men part of it, did that really hit you? It kind of sounded like it did. I mean, we're two guys sitting out here selling sweatpants, man. Like, we're not, I mean,
totally.
Like, did the grown men thing really get to you like that?
A little bit, because it kind of, it makes me sound like a Tea Partier, and I'm not. Like, I think there's a way to reduce critics to idiots, and I think that is what's happened with the Warriors conversation, and it's not totally accurate. I think there are a lot of smart people who can look at this and be like, no, this is stupid.
Yeah, you mad doggy. No, I mean, I think I think there's just a little bit of frustration here that if I'm Kevin Durant or if I'm the Warriors, I kind of understand the premise of where you're coming from, but it's the passion that's confusing. It's like, why do you care so much? Why is his action so all-consuming for you? And I guess
because
I'm still
I
kind
like
of confused.
Basketball.
Yeah.
Because I like basketball.
But don't
I like
you think
the Warriors.
He likes basketball
like
more than
Kevin
you do,
Durant.
Though? But don't you think that he and the Warriors like basketball more than you? I mean, don't you think ultimately when he's striving to be viewed as one of the greats of all times, when he's going back and forth with guys like Shaq who kind of question his place to stand up for a JaVale McGee, when he's committing himself year-round to the game, don't you think he likes basketball more than you? Don't you think he has a greater right for his decision than you do?
I do not like what's happening here. You're playing devil's advocate, but deep down, you agree with me, okay? if we're talking about legacy, you are more worried about what Durant on the Warriors will mean to his legacy than anyone. You've brought it up to me.
Yeah,
so,
well, look, I just think that ship has already sailed. I guess that's sort of where I'm coming from is like, that was part of his calculation. He had to just take on this idea that he went and joined up with a better team. Very similar to LeBron in 2010. That was part of LeBron's calculation. Why did LeBron cry when he won the title last year? Because he knew that answered every single question about him. He did it at home.
Yes.
He did it his own way. And he's still trumpeting that. I don't know if you saw his comments to Cleveland.com this week, but LeBron's basically saying, look, there's nothing else for me to do. I did it. Kevin Durant is not going to be in that same spot if he wins his first title. I will grant you, I don't think he's going to cry if he wins his first title unless it's some ridiculous last-second thing where he climbs Mount LeBron in the most important moment. I think it's going to wind up feeling probably a little bit different for him than maybe he expected after how long he's chased it. Again, we're assuming that they win. They might not win. And so from that standpoint, it's probably not going to be as fulfilling and certainly not from a legacy standpoint to the same degree. but one is better than zero. You know, one's a start. And this guy's been in the league a long time, man. We've been writing about him for a decade. He's had multiple foot surgeries. I mean, the worst case scenario is his, you know, his career just peters out. He never wins the title. He never does it. And we talk about him as one of the greatest, you know, individual scoring guys we've ever seen. One of the freakiest combinations of length and inside-outside talent who just couldn't get it done. That would be the saddest story here.
Yeah, absolutely. Then, and your point about the foot surgeries is a good one. And I will be happy to see him win regardless. My only quibble with what you just said is that I don't think the ship has sailed on his legacy. I think that what I'm really trying to say is that this year with the Warriors is fine as its own thing, as its own sort of crazy story and like sum of all fears basketball roster that will just blow through the NBA. And I think that's what's going to happen over the next couple weeks. However, I think that we should all be on the same page and rooting for them to break up from here. Because if KD went somewhere else, he would be so much more fun. And it would get, like, if he became kind of like a gun for hire over the next few years, it would be fucking awesome. And that's all I'm saying is that the ship has not sailed for Kevin Durant. There's still time for him to change the story, and I hope that he realizes that. And the flip side is, if Klay left Golden State, the Warriors would be more interesting. Like, there are all kinds of different ways that this could get shaken up over the next few years, but I don't think that the state of competitive balance is healthy right now. And I hate, like, typically, I really hate the people who are complaining about competitive balance in the NBA because it's the league has never had like true competitive balance, and the NFL kind of sucks because there's too much competitive balance and everyone is equally mediocre. But the NBA playoffs thus far have shown that like things are too far out of whack.
We just went from an honest conversation to a hater's manifesto. I mean, you're actively rooting for a dynasty to splinter. I mean, this is...
I'm not. I'm rooting for KD to go somewhere else and the Warriors dynasty to remain intact. I've been a Warriors fan all along.
Okay, slow down. Let's spin this forward in all seriousness. Because I can't resist a legacy conversation. So let's say he wins the title, so he can at least declare his stint in Golden State a victory, but he decides, all right, on to the next one, right? What is the scenario where he maximizes his long-term legacy? Like, what is the kind of team or the market? Like, he can't go back to Oklahoma City, right? What, like, is it the hometown return? Is it save the Lakers? Is it go join the Celtics and, you know, be the face there? I mean, do any of those scenarios really get at this legacy idea? I'm not sure they do. I mean, I think maybe his best bet for legacy is you stay in Golden State and you win like five in a row, you know, and then all of a sudden you can say, look, we were part of one of the most dominant runs ever. We consistently won, you know, 65 plus games more years than anybody else. You know, isn't that his best legacy play? I mean, I know it's the one that you want the least, but is there really a better one out there?
That's a good point. There may not be. It's just as a basketball fan, I'm not willing to acknowledge that is a real possibility. Like, this has been an interesting year because it's been so bizarre watching the Warriors just look like they're so much better than anyone else. But I don't want to live like this forever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess my concern is when you're saying like hired gun or assassin, he's going to like go and do these things. What I start to picture is more like a nomad, you know, a man without a home, where it just starts to get awkward because we've seen KD in like four different jerseys over the course of a decade. And we start to get into like premature Paul Pierce territory. I don't want that for KD. You know, I don't want this like weird, like cognitive dissonance, like, whoa, he's a Net. Whoa, he's a Wizard. Now, oh my God, he's a Clipper. And all of a sudden he's retired. Like, I don't want that.
It'd be kind of fun. If he could actually win that way, it would be fun. Even if he just went to Miami this summer, like, that would be wild to watch next year. And it would be fun to watch him sort of orbit LeBron in the East all year. I don't know. Look, we're way too far down the wormhole on this one. But I'm glad that we could finally address this to some degree. I'm sure it will come back up as we go in the playoffs. But I just admit that you're more with me than you've let on.
What I will say is the Warriors have not been as high on my entertainment value scale this year as they were last year. I go with the people who say it's just not been as fun. It hasn't. And the most fun stuff about them has not been Durant. And I've been a pro Durant guy since the very beginning. You know, last week we actually got a question on the mailbag from someone who wanted to know who's been the most, like, our favorite player to watch. And we wound up just, you wound up just ripping on Harden. You didn't even answer the question. my answer to that question would have been Draymond. Draymond's been unreal this postseason. And maybe there's a love-hate thing I've got going on watching that guy play, but he's been ridiculous this postseason. He's been the reason why I've tuned in. The KD thing was almost this weird, like, oh, you got a free dessert on your birthday kind of a moment, you know, in game three. Like, it wasn't why I was there. It was just like, oh, wow, yeah, they still have this guy. I hope he finds that level more consistently because it's not fun to think that he's not in this conversation of best postseason performers, because for years throughout his prime, he's always right there in that mix.
Yeah, I'm with you. We actually got a question about Draymond, and we should finish the Warriors conversation with this. Justin says, are we underestimating Kerr's potential impact on Draymond in the playoffs? Dre can be a maniac, and his behavior basically gave away the finals last year. Mike Brown can't deal with Draymond like Kerr can. When the series is tied up at Game 5 of the finals and Dre is doing Draymond things, who is calming this guy down? Matt Barnes? It's definitely a situation to watch. And yeah, this is kind of what I was alluding to. I mean, it was late on Thursday night when we recorded the other podcast. I was sort of clumsily mumbling my way through. But the Warriors, they're not better without Kerr, but they're a lot more entertaining without Kerr. And that is the direct corollary to Draymond without Kerr, because he is just on one and is completely unchained here. Like, the amount of, probably my favorite quote of the postseason, with all due respect to everything that's been said on the podium, was after that Gobert-Durant dust-up, where Gobert went and I think he missed two free throws, and then cameras caught Draymond just like screaming at Gobert, "What a waste of time! What a waste of time!" And like, that sums up the Warriors' relationship to the rest of basketball better than anything. And there was also, they came out of a timeout and like the ABC cameras caught Draymond just like screaming indiscriminately for the final 5 seconds of the timeout. And he's just in a special place right now.
Yeah. Well, before game three, I wrote a column about Golden State's defense. And I, you know, just kind of pointing out that they've been on a different level than everybody else so far through the playoffs. And about halfway through the column, I was like very careful to note, you know, like, Draymond, no technicals, no flagrants. He's showing his best behavior. He's really doing a great job. Very next night, comes out screaming all over the court, goes after Benny Adams like 15 different times to ensure that he gets a technical foul, and, you know, essentially makes the most of his substitute teacher experience. I'm not that worried about the coaching side of things with Golden State, and I do think that Draymond is in a different place than he was last year. I think last year, especially last summer, things got away from him. Like, he lost control of the rope, whatever that phrase is, like, mentally. Like, he's just, it hit him all too fast, too much too soon. I think he's recentered himself. His attention to detail defensively in terms of his assignments and how he helps, what he does in transition, how he holds down everything, how he competes for rebounds against taller guys is just out of this world. He's got, especially early in the series before Utah really adjusted to him, he had their wings shook. I mean, those guys did not want to go into the paint at all. And I don't know. It's fun to watch. I mean, if Golden State falls apart here, I don't think it's going to be a coaching thing necessarily so much as like alpha dog in clutch situations. Where do we go? KD tries to do too much, too many, you know, forced shots. Pressure gets to them. They haven't had a ton of experience in late game scenarios this year because they've blown everybody out. LeBron overwhelms them. That's how I see this falling apart for Golden State, not Draymond punching somebody and, you know, being a huge distraction.
Exactly. It's a fine distinction between last year and this year, but I think the major difference is that physically Draymond is so locked in and so controlled with everything he's doing on the court that I don't really worry about him like crossing a line. It's more the trash talk, which is now cranked up to 200%, and that's what's making this so much fun to watch. But I'm not, I talked to somebody the other day who basically said, yeah, like Draymond is the one piece that could undo the Warriors because Mike Brown has no idea to control him. So like, it's a valid fear. I'm just not in that boat. I kind of think he'll be fine.
Hey, can I have one last Draymond take here, which is, he is much higher on the list of guys you'd start a franchise with than most people acknowledge. I think how good he is defensively, how he helps his team play at an elite defensive level when he's locked in, especially during the playoffs, has him in this top 5, 6, 7 conversation. And I think most people would not view him that way. If I had to start a team from scratch, one player, I'm taking LeBron first, no question about it. We can go down the other big name stars, Kawhi, Steph, KD, that's fine. Draymond is not that far behind that group.
Interesting. That is a bold statement. I'm not totally sure I'm there yet.
Well, that's just because you're a fantasy guy who's a casual fan, watches the offense.
No, it's just like someone has to score. I don't trust Draymond to score more than like 18 points a game.
Yeah, I understand that, but I mean, it would be a different kind of team. It would not be the Warriors that we're seeing putting up 130 light. You know, it's just going to be a team that's grinding out victories and, you know, scaring you to death with their defense. But by the way, his three-point shooting, I mean, it's bound to regress here at some point, but he's been lights out ridiculous three-point shooting so far during the playoffs, which we probably should have mentioned sometime during this like 15-minute dialogue about Draymond.
Yeah. Well, and also, if Draymond's hitting threes, there's just like a 0% chance of beating the Warriors. Yep. So that's not a great sign for the rest of the league. But let's move on. We have to talk about Kristaps Porzingis.
Okay.
What do you think? At least for a few minutes. What did you think of the whole kerfuffle over the weekend with him?
Well. So if anybody didn't see it, basically he tweets LA Clippers smiley face and then it gets mysteriously deleted. Cover story comes out that he says he was hacked and that he doesn't use that smiley face. Obviously this is on the heels of him skipping his exit meeting with Phil Jackson and a disastrous Knicks season where they really did not use him very well. And also on the heels of, you know, ongoing trade rumors about Carmelo Anthony maybe going to the Clippers. I think it's very strange. It's very unusual. I'm not sure I completely buy the cover story here or what happened, but how do the Clippers get him? What's the scenario where LA's got anything of value to get a guy like Porzingis?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely the one piece where the conspiracy theory sort of unravels, because I'm not sure. I mean,
like,
look.
We got Diamond Stone in a 2022 second round pick. Like.
Yeah, like, put nothing past Phil Jackson, first of all. He could totally trade Kristaps Porzingis for 1 year of DeAndre Jordan or something, and just, like, I would believe anything.
Look,
let me
put it this way. If Luke Walton was on the Clippers roster and not coaching the Lakers, I could see like a Luke Walton for Porzingis trade where Phil just like triples down on the triangle and everyone's like, oh my God, what is this guy doing? But I don't see anyone on the Clippers who really fits that bill.
Yeah, I'm of two minds with this controversy. Well, three minds. Number one, I definitely do not believe that he was hacked. I'm at 0% on that one. That just did not happen. Like, I think there's probably an 80% chance that it was sort of a misfired DM to that woman, the model that was also involved in this. By the way, the NBA is the best sport because of trade controversies involving emojis and Instagram models that upstage like entire playoff series.
Yeah, her name is Abigail Rashford. There's some ongoing history there, but she apparently also tweeted Clippers.
Yes.
And then also deleted it, I believe, and then they've exchanged emojis on Instagram previously. So that all adds fuel to the fire here that maybe there was a private conversation that became public, right?
Yeah. And what I really want to believe, and only believe it about 20%, is that this was all a part of a master plan from Kristaps to tweet out the Clippers rumor and just to sort of let people know that trade talks are happening and nothing's out of the question. Everything's on the table right now, and that there should be more discussion about teams who should be trying to trade for Porzingis.
For sure. Well, there was a very strange ESPN report that came out saying that teams had called the Knicks about Porzingis after he skipped the exit interview, which, where does that come from, right? Like, who's got motivation to put that out? Either teams that are trying to trade for Porzingis, which is possible, or Porzingis, right, if you want somebody to trade for him. Probably not Phil, because that makes him look terrible at his job, because his young franchise building block, who's on a rookie deal and should be the future of the franchise for the next 10 years, is drawing trade interest, and that's a huge distraction if you're in his gigantic media market. So somebody is jockeying here, right? I mean, somebody's shaking the trees, kind of hoping that maybe Phil will really, really screw this up.
Yeah, well, and if Porzingis were intentionally tweeting it, like, it would, that was a shrewd move, because it really did sort of force people to notice that Ian Begley report, first of all, and then second of all, start talking about it. Like, maybe this is it for Porzingis in New York. Well, and then
it'd be a good way to avoid a fine too, right? I mean, it's not a trade demand if it's an accidental DM, quote unquote, that you delete.
Exactly. Like, this is a move that more superstars should adopt, whether Porzingis meant to or not. It's a move that should be in the playbook for people. And then to come back with the frequently used emojis, and he said, "I would never tweet something like that. I don't even use that emoji smiley face," and tweeted a bunch of emojis. His like frequently used tab, and then added, "Come on, B," and that too. Of course, the internet loves it anytime Porzingis says, "Come on, B," and so that coupled with his emojis was a good way to try to sell the hack. So basically, I think Porzingis is more internet literate than we realized. That's the number one takeaway for me.
Well, I just like that. Phil Jackson's corner was the very difficult to decipher tweets where there's like misspellings. And now Porzingis, in a very mellow-esque way, has kind of like completely nudged Phil Jackson out of that area, right? Like, he's basically claimed it for his. I mean, this is really a power struggle over who's got the better Twitter profile. I mean, I love it. Like, I mean, remember that was his thing. How is it going? And, you know, he's posting his breakups on Twitter and... And he's doing all of these things that people are trying to... Remember the whole fiasco about Carmelo, where he was, you know, talking about shades of a leopard or whatever that thing was? I mean, this was sort of what he was known for. And now Porzingis is like, "Oh yeah, watch this." And with a couple words and a few smiley faces, you're completely erased.
Fight fire with fire. I like it. So should we talk about the Raptors here?
We probably should. I mean... I'm not going to do too much told you so stuff, but we probably should mention it. I just have one question, though. You know, it's really been bothering me, because what do you make of these so-called NBA experts who picked the Raptors over the Cavaliers in this series? And some of them even picked, I think, the Raptors to go on to the finals. I mean, what do you make of those morons?
Oh, my God. I can't believe you're doing this.
What do you make of those idiots?
To let the listeners in on some ongoing dialogue, I have been complaining. SINBA, we were all asked to submit our playoff picks the day before the playoffs started. Pretty standard assignment. I picked Warriors over, not the Cavs. And first of all, not looking great for every team but the Cavaliers in the East. I went out on a limb, and that limb is shakier than it's ever been. However, I did not like sincerely pick the Raptors, basically I picked not the Cavs, and then our editor came back with a note and said, "No, like, you have to actually pick a team." And I wasn't going to pick the Wizards. I wasn't going to curse them with those expectations, and I wasn't going to pick the Celtics. I picked the Celtics in October, but over the course of the year, their fans got a little bit unbearable, and I wasn't gonna.
You were
wasn't
boxed
gonna
into
cast
a corner.
My lot. Yeah, I was not gonna cast my lot with the sons of Brad Stevens. So I sort of picked the Raptors as my sacrificial lamb, And now, like, during every Cavs game from this series, somebody would tweet a photo of my playoff bracket with the fucking Raptors in the finals saying, oh my God, I can't believe you get paid to write about basketball. But all of it was because I was just not willing to pick the other two teams in the East. And I never seriously thought the Raptors were going to be in the NBA Finals. And no one is going to ever believe that. So I'm just sort of stuck. I have to hold this L.
No, I mean, this is really reminiscent of like James Comey's recent testimony. So we should probably leave that explanation there. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. I mean, I could tell that was really painful.
It's going to piss me off for like the next several years that I had to at one point pick the Raptors to beat the Cavs and make the finals. And look, I did think that there was a 20 or 30% chance that the Raptors would push the Cavs. And you can go back like a couple weeks ago, we were talking about it. So I'm an idiot. LeBron is incredible. I think that's the number one takeaway, is that LeBron made these dudes look like a JV squad.
He sure did. And let's bury them, and let's not dwell on, you know, your mistake here too much. Let's look forward to the future of the Raptors. And you know, I kind of wrote about this the other night because everyone wants to know, like, is it time to blow them up? Like, do you really want to commit to Lowry and DeRozan as your guys going forward if, you know, they're both just openly saying during the middle of a series that they have no answer for LeBron and LeBron's going to be kind of looming over them for the next few years as it is? Do you want to pay a guy like Ibaka, who didn't look great? Can you trade some of these guys like Jonas and Corey Joseph and Damari Carroll? Or are you just kind of stuck with those guys? How many minutes can you give to the young guys? Is it time to move on from Dwayne Casey? And I guess my big takeaway from this after I looked at it was just that Masai Ujiri is a cool, calculating dude. This is not somebody, if we look at his track record in terms of being an executive, who like rushes into detonating things. He's been the head of an organization for 7 years, 3 in Denver, 4 in Toronto. They've made the playoffs all 7 years. And did you actually know this stat? Since he took over the Raptors have actually won more games in the last 4 seasons in the East than any other team. That's kind of crazy. So to me, it's all about respectability for Toronto. I know it's really emotional right now. I know it hurts. I know watching DeRozan just brick tough twos down the stretch of fourth quarter after fourth quarter because he's got no other answer, and getting called out by his coach for his poor defense in the exit interviews on Monday morning. I know all of that hurts. But you know what hurts worse than that? Winning 30 to 35 games because you decided not to pay Kyle Lowry, or you know, trading DeRozan, which is probably the move that I would do because I wouldn't be so tied up in sort of, you know, fan sentiment and all that, and having this big hole in your heart next season because, you know, the best era of Raptors basketball just, you know, shattered completely. So I guess if I'm looking forward, I'm in the Raptors, pay Lowry, you know, bring back DeRozan, understand that you're not a contender. I mean, level with yourself. All this stuff about, oh, DeRozan's so underrated, 46. Like, look, he's just not that good. Just admit it and be happy with a postseason appearance and be glad you're not an also-ran. And then in 2 years, trade Lowry to the Knicks and move forward when you're forced to. That's kind of how I think this is going to play out.
Well, first of all, I want to congratulate you. As hard as I lost this Cavs-Raptors series, you won. Your crusade against the mid-range is over now. You know, you have nothing left to say. Your watch has ended. Yeah, man, DeRozan was pretty terrible, and they had nothing.
He was throwing Nerf guns, wasn't he? Like, I mean, it was like AK-47s versus his Nerf gun.
In his defense, again, I'm not going to be turned into a DeRozan stan by you, but in his defense, the shooters around him were just completely helpless. He's not a great passer, but like, they missed so many open shots in this series. I didn't even watch game 4, but the first couple games were just brutal. Most interesting, though, I don't know if they're... from what Kyle Lowry was saying today, like, I'm not sure the Raptors are going to be in control of what he ends up doing this summer. Like, it sounds like he really might leave on his own accord. And in which case, like, I wonder where you think he would fit around the league.
Yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, ultimately, I think his talk about, oh, I only want to win a ring, is him saying the right thing. and posturing. You know, ultimately, like, he has not gotten the big payday. Toronto can offer the big payday. In the past, Masai has always taken care of his vets, almost always, and then traded them down the road. So I think I'm kind of reading through some of that. In terms of the biggest moves that I can see Toronto actually doing, I think that they might move on from Dwayne Casey. I think you're in a situation when you're Toronto where if your roster is stacked with big contracts for Lowry and DeRozan, you're relying heavily on all these rookie steal guys, you know, Pascal, you know, Van Vliet, you know, right down the list, DeLon Wright, all these guys are going to have to play minutes for you because you've tied up so much money in your stars. That means you're going to take a step back in the standings. And, you know, Casey has been through a lot in Toronto. Maybe one way you kind of, you know, manage that retooling effort is to bring in a new coach to do that. But to answer your question about Lowry, if he's serious about winning a title, I don't see a scenario where he's really going to have that opportunity. I mean, is San Antonio going to mortgage everything to go after him if they can't get Chris Paul? Doubtful. Houston's locked in with their guards. I mean, it kind of goes back to what I've said about DeRozan in the past. Like, how many of the teams in the West, like the top four teams in the West, does DeRozan really start on? Not many, if any. Yeah. And same thing with Lowry. I mean, he's not going to supplant Steph Curry in Golden State. I mean, the true contenders are not in the mood to pay him, you know, $150 million or $200 million, whatever it's going to take on a four-year contract to get him. I think the $200 million numbers for 5 years that Toronto can give him. Boston's good. Washington's good. I've heard this talk, oh, send him to Philly. I would never do that. If I'm Philly, I'm good with Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons should be cultivated as the next Giannis, as the next LeBron point forward. He should have the ball. He shouldn't have this super demanding, ball-dominant point guard kind of lurking over him for the rest of, you know, his entree into the NBA. It makes no sense.
So the reason I asked the question, though, is because I've spent the last 24 hours periodically wondering about Kyle Lowry on the Wolves. And the Philly situation is sort of, it's a bad example, but like, because Philly has to kind of like build from the ground up. But the Wolves are closer and further along in the rebuilding process, and it might make sense to bring in a veteran who can kind of help push them over the top. I don't know.
Yeah, I like that fit. I mean, I like that fit because it moves Zach back to his natural spot, I think, which is going to be a super scorer off the bench. It helps, you know, Wiggins be a natural fit in a very similar DeRozan mold. Lowry is going to be able to do a lot of pick and pop stuff with Towns. And he also fits Tibbs' like two-way complete player mold. Good mentor for Chris Dunn, who needs some mentorship. Let's just put it kindly. But that's not a title team, you know? And is it worth sacrificing the amount of money if you're Lowry and you've never had that big payday? Is it worth sacrificing that fifth year of potential guaranteed money to have a mild upgrade and go into a deeper conference where they haven't even made the playoffs? I mean, you're going back to trying to rebuild a team. It's almost like taking a time machine back to the Raptors 3 years ago. Do you really want to go through that process again?
That's true. Keep in mind, earlier in this podcast, we predicted five consecutive titles for Kevin Durant and the Warriors. So I don't know what title team is out there.
I think every player
has to adjust expectations a little bit.
For sure. And that's my point. That's why I think Toronto's still in the driver's seat here, is because
you
can have all this lip service about, I want to win a title. Well, cool. Show me. You want to go take Isaiah's job in Boston? Good luck. You want to go take John Wall's job in Washington? No. I mean, where is he going to go where he's going to be an upgrade for a contender? The only contender that doesn't have a point guard, you know, potentially would be like if you're not a Beverly guy in Houston. But there's no way Houston's taking the ball out of Harden's hand under any circumstances. And you can circle San Antonio. But again, the number of maneuvers that would be necessary for them to give him max money, they'd be blowing up their team. I just don't see it. Maybe you could talk me into San Antonio doing that for a Chris Paul, but not for a Lowry. Right. And that's why I think it's just the right thing to say, you know, especially after you came out and told Woj on Yahoo, no one's closing the gap on LeBron. And then, you know, what's the right way to kind of clean up that mess? Well, you say, oh, I want to win a title, you know?
Yeah, fair enough. You're right that all things considered, spending the rest of his career in Toronto and sort of cementing his place as like an icon for that franchise is probably preferable to to living that nomad life and still not winning a title.
And I'm not even saying that's how it's going to play out. Like, I just think you just keep riding this kind of golden era, whatever you want to call it, for Toronto, where you're in the playoffs every year, you're relevant, people talk about you, you're probably getting selected to the All-Star team. And then 2 or 3 years from now, once he really does deteriorate, Masai will, you know, call up, you know, the most desperate, dumb, you know, name-seeking GMs, most likely Phil Jackson, Magic Johnson, so forth, and pawn those guys off to them and move forward with the rebuild when he has to. It just seems like that's the winning scenario for everybody. Lowry and DeRozan also have a good friendship. I think that's a factor here. And if you do bring in a new coach, and part of the pitch to Lowry during free agency is, look, we're going to bring in a coach who's not going to play you 35 to 37 minutes every single night like Casey did these last couple of years, you're going to be in a position to be healthier and more effective in the postseason down the stretch of seasons, that's probably enough to tip the balance, right?
Yeah. I mean, I guess so. I don't know if anything's really tipping the balance for the Raptors at this point. But I'm glad that we don't have to watch them in the playoffs anymore. That's a victory.
That was the big takeaway. I mean, they got their balloon popped hard. All these people who thought DeRozan was like top 15 player or whatever they were thinking, or, you know, I mean, reality hit them hard. And I think that include DeRozan and Lowry themselves. I think these guys got caught up in their own hype. You know, the We the North underdog stuff, they really believed it. And they came crashing down very quickly in game one against Cleveland. I think they also believe this concept, hey, we won two games against Cleveland last year, we've got a better roster this year, we're going to do it. That's a really easy thing to sell yourself on. But LeBron is playing better than he did in last year's East Finals. And I think his bench unit is significantly better. And that was the difference.
Yeah. All right, let's finish up with like 2 minutes on Wizards Celtics. Toby emailed us, just emailing you during a Boston timeout in game four, immediately following that 24-0 run. Time to cut the crap. He needs more recognition. Talk me out of taking John Wall over every other point guard in a hypothetical league redraft. The guy attacks the rim and creates transition out of nothing like Westbrook. He can pass like CP3. He can get hot like Steph, plus his defensive ability. Toby, I'm with you, man. John Wall is fucking incredible. He's so much fun to watch. And he really, he's sort of a counterpoint to a lot of where the league is going, and is so good that it doesn't totally matter. I am not with you on John Wall over every other point guard in a hypothetical redraft, because Steph Curry still exists and is probably the second best player in the league. However, beyond that, and it's actually kind of funny, like, every time people want to get hyperbolic about John Wall, someone will be like, John Wall, that's the best point guard in the East, or that's the second best player in the East. And they never say best point guard in the league out of respect for Steph, which I like, because that's what Steph Curry deserves at this point. He's been so good for the last couple years. But beyond that, Wall over the last couple games has just been on another level, really, for the last like 8 months. I'm scared to say too much about the Wizards, because it's just, they are so clearly the better team, and that's kind of terrifying to me. I'm not sure I could handle them losing this series, and that's still like very much on the table as they go back to Boston. But give me 90 seconds of your thoughts on where that series stands.
Well, my main thought after hearing that was, how many different email addresses are you going to create to send in emails to ask us to talk about John Wall? I think the number one most common question that we've gotten has been, please just say how great John Wall is. There's no way like 15 different people are all going to email that question in over the last 3 months. I'm pretty confident you're behind all of it.
And yo, you know what's funny is I actually don't like, I'm less comfortable talking about the Wizards when they're really good, because I watch this team really closely. I obviously like know a lot about them, have written a lot about them, but when they're really good and in like an objective way, it's hard to talk about them without sounding like just like a shameless homer. So it's tough for me. And I promise you, I am not creating John Wall questions. My natural reaction to what's happening here is to just, I don't want to say anything to screw it up, because like they are just so much fun right now.
Yeah, their answer, we talked about their answer in game three, which I was really impressed by. Game four, I mean, ran them off the court in the third quarter. And if I'm Boston, I'm super nervous. And I didn't totally understand where Stevens was coming from with his paranoia after the first two wins.
Yeah.
But that has proven completely well-founded. Isaiah's griping for calls, which, you know, trying to set up and work the refs in advance of game five. I mean, they certainly need him on the free throw line playing like he has. I don't think Washington's necessarily solved him, but they found more success. And they are proving right. that, you know, Boston's supporting guys don't travel that well. You know, I mean, those guys who have been kind of hit or miss have been more missed lately these last couple games. It's a real series. You know, I picked Washington before the series. I thought they were dead. They've come back, and it's great to see. In terms of what you were saying about Wall and the kind of does he fit, is he kind of this modern point guard? I mean, yes, he's not this like big-time off-the-dribble three-point shooter that we think of when we look at Steph. But he drives relentlessly. He gets deep. He can finish. He gets to the free throw line. He's a very good drive and kick reader. And I think he's wired like a point guard in terms of setting his guys up. And they've done a much better job of keeping the space around him. Those are all things that I think of when I think of modern offense. And I think also he deserves some credit for having the trust in his own jumper to break it out when he needs to. I mean, we saw DeRozan. Not to go back to him, but he is the outlier here. We saw how crippling it is when you're afraid to shoot a three-pointer, when you're stepping in to shoot an 18-footer every single time. Wall is not going to beat you with his jumper. Like, that's not going to be his number one weapon. But when he's needed to hit a three, he's felt comfortable taking it, and he's hit a few during this series as well. So
that's a good point.
I think he's actually...
For better or worse, he has no fear taking those jumpers.
Yeah, and he hits some. And, you know, to me... That is the first step of the battle. And look, I don't understand how many times I have to say this to people. I had him on my All-NBA, okay? I had him over Isaiah Thomas. I have him over most people when it comes to these rankings. I respect his all-around game. I get the kind of criticisms about his defense that pop in here and there. But yes, I would take Steph over him, not too many other point guards.
Yeah, he's hitting another level. And it won't be complete until... Like, I don't think you ever really open anyone's eyes in the NBA until you win something that you're not supposed to. And I think that would be this Celtics series for the Wizards. Because there have been a lot of people anointing John Wall all year. And it won't be totally real unless he can actually finish this series. But he's awesome regardless. One other thing on Boston, though. Can you figure out why Brad Stevens doesn't play Jaylen Brown more? Because like starting Amir Johnson is completely inexplicable to me. Starting Gerald Green over Jaylen Brown doesn't really make sense to me. I just don't get it. Like, the rest of their roster is pretty underwhelming, but Jaylen Brown is kind of like a pain in the ass for any team to deal with, specifically defensively, but then he can also do some things on offense. Like, there have been some puzzling decisions from Brad Stevens.
Yeah, you're not alone in calling for that. I would say that trying to analyze some of his lineups and decisions, like especially the Gerald Green one, a lot of times to me it's like, dude, this guy's like, you know, calculus three, and I'm still in geometry.
That's,
you know,
yeah, so that's like, a great point.
I do give him a lot of leeway on that because like the Gerald Green thing worked really well in the first round, and that would I never would have stumbled upon that idea in a million years, no matter how many, you know, how long I looked at it. So, you know, the Amir, I think it's defense. I mean, his defensive impact numbers have been super duper strong for a long time. I guess that's where he's going with that. But yeah, it's not working. It didn't work in game three and four. You know, we'll see where he goes. I mean, I don't think he's done making his adjustments. But ultimately, I think that their problems in game four, especially, it goes back to Isaiah. Like, they got to get him loose. He's got to get those foul calls. They rely on that. Their offense is never going to work unless Isaiah's going.
And you know what's interesting? I think, like, obviously we entered the playoffs with all kinds of questions about Isaiah, but it's not his fault that things are not working right now, because he was making all the right passes in game four and guys just weren't hitting shots. Like, the supporting cast is coming up empty here.
Yeah. Well, they're not traveling. I mean, that's part of it. And you worry about that the deeper you go in the postseason. But look, in terms of Wall making it to the conference finals, we've seen the impact that's had for other guys, whether it's Paul George, even Lowry and DeRozan last year. I mean, that is a crucial step. You know, if they were to make the conference finals, take a game off of the Cavaliers, I think all of the buzz heading into the offseason would be Wall is the best player in the East beside LeBron, period.
Yeah, We'll see. We'll see. All right, man. Well, I will talk to you later in the week. I guess we'll reconvene either Thursday or Friday. Send in mailbag questions, and please pardon my Durant grumpiness. We had to talk about it. You know what I mean?
It was an honest conversation. I'm glad we've had it. A couple quick plugs here, Andrew. Openfloormail@gmail.com. Send us your questions. We've gotten some really funny pictures, really funny stories. The fan fiction from Poland was phenomenal. So please keep those coming in. Openfloormail@gmail.com. Also, 5-star reviews on iTunes. We really appreciate it. It helps us get noticed. It helps spread the word and the buzz about this podcast. One last thing I'd like to say thank you for, Andrew, is all of the pity follows on Instagram. You know, I was taking some shots on last week's episode because, you know, my Instagram follower count wasn't very high. I got to say, I got like 30 or 35 pity follows from people on Instagram. I didn't even post anything. The followers were just rolling in after that episode. So anybody who pity followed me, I appreciate it. Andrew, thanks for plugging all my social media accounts. I always appreciate that from you as well. I'm sorry
about
your... The
Golver brand is on the rise right now.
It really is. I'm sorry about your Raptors pick too, man. That was a bummer. But hey, at least the Wizards about to make the Eastern Conference Finals, so you're good. Right?
I'm hanging up. God damn it. I'll talk to you later in the week.
Openfloormail@gmail.com. 5-star reviews.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.